All right, Michelle, welcome back to Better Call Saul and West Coast Project.
It has been over a year.
401 Smoke.
I know.
Did you get any double entendre meaning from the name Smoke?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. We got all the stuff going on with Mike and Gus and everything that went on with Hector. And, of course, we have all the stuff with Jimmy and Kim and where that's going to lead and the stuff we know. Did you get something different?
I got one big one from Gene when the cab driver was staring at him, like, suspiciously, like, somebody's watching me. Somebody's suspect of my undercover identity. That maybe there's smoke where there's smoke, there's fire there. Maybe it's more than just paranoia.
Yeah, there was a couple different scenes in this episode where I think there was more going on. I think we see that with Gus just a little bit later on too. So yeah, I completely agree with that.
Also, how much different Gene is than Jimmy?
He's like a shell of Jimmy. He even looks thinner. I don't have any idea how they do that, but he doesn't even look like... And Saul is even like a more bolsterous Jimmy. And then Gene is just the complete, like, just a tiny piece.
Like a ghost.
Yes, he is. And so sad. What did you think about the song they were playing?
It's just loneliness. Just being all alone. What is it? His shadow?
Yeah, it's called We Three, and it's talking about my echo, my shadow, and me, and how much they long for the person they love, and how lonely we three are. I thought that was so sad because, of course, we see Jimmy. We've had Jimmy, Saul, and now Gene. So it is literally three, and how lonely he is. His life just looks like a form of hell.
Well, those three are just an emphasis of one, meaning...
Well, sure,
it's just one. He's by himself.
But it's like he misses his love with the whole of him. Every bit of him misses essentially life, I would guess.
Well, apparently he's lost, you know, we know he's lost Chuck, so his only tie to his family, and then probably Kim. And, it, you know, he's just by himself, doesn't seem to have much going on with the Cinnabon gig he's got.
Doesn't look like the funnest thing. According to Hollywood Reporter, three episodes of the season were given for review, but I didn't get them. Did you?
Yeah, I went through.
You did?
No, I didn't.
Because I didn't. I would have really liked to have seen them ahead of time because a lot of people who are doing some write-ups and stuff on it are kind of teasing other things. But, you know, I found that a lot of times some of the people who do these write-ups, even the professional ones, they're in error with a lot of things. And I think we'll talk about that on another podcast that we do. But so I don't even know what to trust with it.
So, Michelle, you did a total rewatch of this whole thing from last season, right?
I did.
You did rewatch, re-podcast?
Yes,
did. You listen to all the podcasts, too?
I listened to them as I went to sleep, so I listened to at least the beginning of them. Some of them I finished, and some of them I didn't, but then I would watch the next and then listen to it as I went to sleep. So
that's pretty funny. I do them as I go to sleep.
That's how I feel sometimes too. Yeah. Okay. So Mike.
So where?
Go ahead.
Okay. Sorry. Well, I'm going to ask you. So where are we in your do your summary of the recaps? But what was your question?
Well, I was just going to ask you what you think about. People are saying that prequels can never be as good as originals or sequels, because it's too hard to create like a true long-term suspense. A lot of people are really frustrated with this episode. They feel like it's slow. Not this episode, this series. What do you think?
Oh, I was going to say this episode was pretty slow. This episode.
But the episode had to be slow because we ended on such a bang. We had to tie that stuff up. It was slow. It was slow in a way. But if you watch Saul, every single scene, I don't know if it's the combination of actors or what it is, but every single scene is so meaningful in nuance. You see looks and the cinematography, the way they shoot stuff. It's just everything about it is rich. So I really enjoy this show. It doesn't have to be shoot 'em up, bang 'em up, somebody's getting poisoned in every episode to hold my attention for it. I think there's so much good in it. But some people really want the Breaking Bad, but they're saying that because we know the eventual outcome, that it's not as suspenseful.
No, I don't feel that way at all. I think prequels are pretty interesting, how people got to where we know they are. I like that. I think it's compelling.
Yeah, there's a lot that I'd like to see that we haven't even seen yet. I would like to see what Hector actually did with Gus Lover. I would like to see that scene. I wonder if they're ever going to show us that.
What do you mean what he did with Gus's lover?
Well, he killed him or had him killed or something. We did see it?
Yeah, that was in Salute. He shot him at the pool.
But more behind it. You know, like I don't know. I just would like to see more story about that because I just don't feel like we got the full picture of it.
Well, we don't have the picture. We don't have Gus's history. We don't know why he and Max were. Well, first of all, we don't know that they were lovers. We think that they are. It seems that way. But we, you know, Gus's story is compelling. But I think that was just evidence of Hector being cruel. I don't think Hector had anything personal against Max. I think he's just cruel.
But he has something personally against Gus now, anyway.
And yeah, outsmarted him and stole his line of business from the cartel.
Okay, upon rewatching season 3, I must have completely blocked this, but I did not remember that Chuck killed himself. I did not remember him kicking until he kicked the lantern over.
Yeah, it's suicide.
Yeah, I remembered that he caught his house on fire, and I remember that he kicked it, but I was thinking it was more like in frustration. For some reason, I had that in my mind than it was in deliberation. And it absolutely wasn't. It was definitely him wanting to start the fire.
Well, I mean, it wasn't an accident, although they made it look like it could have been an accident. I mean, an accident could not. I shouldn't say it that way. An accident, that setting was ripe for an accident to happen. Like, ooh, right. It's by all those papers, and ooh, that desk is too full of stuff, and one little nudge of the wrong edge of the papers could push everything across the desk and knock the lantern over. But yeah, he clearly sees that, and he's like, this would be easy to just end all this and push everything, and that's what he does.
And it was really sad. The end of it was really sad, and how much he regressed and everything. I don't think there's any love lost on my part for Chuck, because Chuck was terrible. But I think Chuck had his place, and I think we're going to probably see that in this.
This episode had it was very slow, but it had the, like you said, the establishing. It reminded us of where everything was, and it established like the double pulley leverage of things, like how one thing led to a second thing, and those two things multiplied their force.
Right.
And that leverage is what pushed Chuck to the final. You know, it wasn't just Jimmy showing him up in court. It was like that showing him up in court forced the insurance thing to happen, and that forced Howard to do. So it was like a domino leverage thing of things that happened that forced Chuck to bow out.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I agree. He was just... And also, after he tore his house apart, he knew how that was going to look to everybody after he had done so well. And I think that he couldn't face that, too, maybe. Because remember how he really tore his house apart? We have to go back and remember that he, like, ripped every, like, electrical wiring out of the walls. He, like, followed it. It was terrible.
Well, yeah, and Jimmy says at one point all the appliances were in the backyard. The firemen didn't do that.
Right. Right.
All right, Michelle, is there anything else you noticed from season three that we need to remember?
Not that I have up front. Maybe as we go along. What about you?
Kim's hurt from the car wreck. That's why her arm's in the cast, because she was working too hard and she's spaced out in her car.
Yeah, she fell asleep. We actually start off this whole episode in real time and now time and, of course, prequel time, where we left off with all of it, even with Gene. We start out at the Cinnabon with Gene on the floor with the icing spatula stuck to the side of his head.
Yeah, I just want to get people to where people that didn't watch season three all over again. So Kim has the cast because she was in the car wreck. Jimmy's on leave for a year, suspended for a year as a lawyer.
Right.
That's his punishment.
Yes.
And he's kind of looking for jobs and stuff, but he can't be a lawyer for a year. And Chuck's dead. What else? What else do we need to know? I'm trying to remember.
Well, everything
Hector's had his event with the taking the wrong fake medicine instead of the nitro medicine that would have helped his stroke.
Yes, nitroglycerin ibuprofen doesn't work as well as nitroglycerin, I don't think.
So he had some sort of a medical event that seems to have hurt him pretty badly. And then we'll see. I guess we'll see as we go through this episode what happens from that. But anything else from season three, though, that we need to know? I don't think there is. That kind of catches us up.
No, I don't think so. I think season three ended with a bang, and we have to catch up with all that, at least on this episode. And how hard Jimmy was struggling with money, I think that had a whole lot to do with last episode too, and that's what made Kim work so hard. And he had he was doing the elder law, and he ended up, because he needed the money, he ended up really pushing one of the women to take a settlement, and the only way to push her to do that so he would get his cut of it was to turn her friends against her. And then he felt so guilty about that. So we still saw so much empathy in Jimmy that he confessed to it, to what he had done, sort of. And so now we know that he'll never be able to go back to elder law. And while that's not really important right now, I think it's going to be important even when he gets his license back, because that was his shtick. That was his thing. And now he can't even do that.
And for Mike had gone to Gus to ask him how to launder the money that he got.
Absolutely,
And his method of laundering the money was Gus got Mike the job at Madrigal Electromotive, and that he's getting big checks now. That's his, what was it, $200,000 getting laundered?
Yes, it was $200,000, $10,000 a week for 20 weeks, but he didn't actually get him a job. He got him a job on paper. So that's what makes this so much funnier. I'm glad we had that little relief in this, because it was a sad episode in a lot of ways, but I was glad we had that.
Well, he got a job. He's got him a job. That's the front for how his money's getting processed back to him.
Except Mike was never supposed to show up.
Well, but technically it's a job. It's right. You just collect the checks, but Mike wants to see what he's connected to. He's always been an investigator from his cop days,
right,
his private eye days, but he wants to know what he's connected to, what kind of group of people this electromotive group is.
Yeah, I've got a couple questions about that when we get there, but I don't want to jump too far ahead on that and see what you think about it.
All right, so I can't think of anyone else that we need to catch up with, but those are the four main: Chuck, Jimmy, Kim, Mike, Gus.
Right.
Nacho.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, so we start off in real time with Gene on the floor with the icing spatula stuck to the side of his head. And this is where the EMTs are coming in. And it looks like it could be something serious. They do an echo on his heart. They're doing x-rays and blood work. He has an IV and oxygen and everything. But what's really stressing Jimmy out, even as he feels like he may be, or Gene out, even as he feels like he may be going through a heart attack, is the police that he sees walking through the ER, which of course they do a lot. So that's even keeping him stressed out. But then we find out that it wasn't a heart attack at all, and everything looks pretty good. So that's relieving. But then that scene where he is walking out, he gets dressed and he's relieved and he's walking out, but the receptionist stops him. That was a pretty cool scene, didn't you think?
It is a bit of a false alarm. I mean, it maybe could have been better if there really was a reason why his license didn't go through. But it seems like she just typed in the wrong zeros instead of alpha instead of numerics, and that's what did it.
Right. But I think it was a great way to show us how paranoid Gene is. So Gene not only lives his life lonely and as this Cinnabon manager, but he's also scared to death. He's scared of the police. He's scared of a receptionist in an ER. Every little thing, he's scared of the taxi driver. Every little thing in his life, he's afraid is going to be the end. He's afraid they're coming after him. So that was tense. I've never seen anybody give their social security number that slow.
Who do you think Gene is afraid of?
I think Gene's afraid of everybody. Gene went through what they call it, the disappearer. Nobody is on Gene's side, because I was thinking for a minute, why is he afraid of the cops and why is he afraid of the Social Security number? He's on the witness protection, but he's not on the witness protection program. That's not it. He just disappeared. So the cops are looking for him, and probably both sides of the mob are looking for him.
Yeah, the cartel is more scary to him than the authorities, because look at his life, man. His life sucks. So he gets caught. He goes to jail. That would suck too. But you know, that's really not that different. It's a downgrade for sure from being free and being able to go to your own house and have a glass of whiskey at the end of the day and all that. But it's really not as far a fall as if he was living in like fat riches with people all around him and friends and parties and all that. He's not. He doesn't have that. He has nothing. You know, he has his shadow and whatever the song says. So that would be a fall, but not a great fall. A really great fall, I think, would be the cartel, like just fear for his life, being killed by the cartel.
Well, right. And if he does go to jail, then that would likely happen. The cartel would be able to get to him.
Well, maybe.
So there's just, he's paranoid of everything. And we see that as he gets in the taxi. But wasn't it strange that the guy had an Albuquerque air freshener? Yeah. I'm sorry?
Yeah, the Albuquerque Isotopes are the minor league baseball team.
Oh, okay.
That's what it was.
I wasn't even sure, but it was like this air freshener hanging in his cab with Albuquerque on it.
In Omaha. Yeah, that was weird.
And plus the way the guy's looking at him, and he asks him to stop. He wants to get out. Well, first he tells him the light's green and the guy's not even paying attention to driving. And then he wants out and the guy doesn't let him out. I don't know.
Well, that guy was overly creepy. You don't stare at somebody like that.
Right. That's what I'm saying. So I'm curious if there is actually something to it. Because we see this a little bit later on, like with Gus, when Gus is looking at Nacho weird and there really is something to it. Or if that's kind of like a precursor to how they're doing this, what's going on, these looks really mean something. Or if it's just coincidental and it was late and the guy was tired.
Are we getting an affair like POV from Jimmy fearing the cab driver out of his paranoia?
Right.
The Affair, the guy, another podcast on the West Coast Project Network.
Okay, but the guy stops him on this residential street, and Gene gets out, and he even, like, bends down, like he's tying his shoe, I guess, or something. He was really, really scared, and just imagining living your life like that. I assume that's what happened to him when he passed out at work. He was just overcome. This is, like, a constant thing, so I don't think things are going to go real smoothly.
Yeah, he wants the cab driver to not know where he's going to end up, so he kind of fakes the shoe thing, I think, just hoping the guy drives away. But the guy doesn't drive away. He stays there.
And then Jimmy
has to walk around the corner even.
Sure. But he wasn't even taking him home. He was taking him back to the mall.
Still, he doesn't want him to know even that. He doesn't want him to know anything about where he's going.
Right, or his car. You know, he'd have to get into his car, presumably, at the mall. He didn't want to know anything. So.
Well, that's smart. He just doesn't. He wants to cut every tie to where that guy might be able to trace him down.
It's smart, but it's scary, and it's sad that that's how he's having to live his life. And he is that paranoid, be it
whether true. It's merit or not.
Right, yeah. Right. But this brings us up to the intro, and then we come back, and we're back in the prequel time, and the little puffs of fire. Wasn't that a great scene? Because for a moment, I thought we were right outside Chuck's house, but we saw these little puffs of fire that, of course, go up when you have a big fire, and they're landing on Jimmy and Kim, who are laying in bed together.
Yeah, that was weird. Like, I was expecting one to land on Jimmy and wake him up or catch their bedspread on fire.
Yeah, but it was just
dreamlike.
Yeah. But I thought it was really cool considering how much this fire may have to do with the changing of who Jimmy is and may even, in fact, burn down what he has with Kim by allowing and causing Jimmy to slip more into Saul. Because as much as we dislike Chuck and dislike the way he was with Jimmy, I think it may be becoming clear that Chuck is the one that kept Jimmy striving to be the good guy. And now Chuck is gone. Well, Chuck and Kim, certainly. But everybody wants to see Saul. When's he going to turn into Saul? It's season 4. When are we going to see Saul? And of course, we've seen the name and stuff. But for Saul to emerge, I think maybe we have to see the end of Kim, too, in this series. Because that will be, like, the last thing that holds. We see Jimmy be so kind to Kim. We see him in this very episode. He wakes up and he's laid in a certain position to make sure she's comfortable. And it's real 50-ish. The clock is like 6:19 in the morning. Jimmy gets up, he feeds the fish, he makes the coffee, he gets the paper. He's having a bowl of cereal as he reads the job listings. And he's circling various ones. And he's all happy. He's ready to face the day. It reminded me, my husband Mike is watching a series on Amazon Prime. It's called Patriot. And it's like this black comedy. And in it, one of the characters is pretty obsessed with breakfast. He talks about having breakfast meetings with friends and how it's really something to share a big spread with somebody at breakfast. He calls it the optimistic meal. You have the whole day before you. Anything is possible. And it really reminded me of Jimmy. He seemed to have this mindset as he's slurping down his Cheerios. He's really happy and seems optimistic. And then he gets the cell phone call from Howard, but he doesn't answer it. He takes the coffee to Kim, and we see him be so kind to her. He's, here, trade me out. She's trying to put the bag over her arm so she can take a shower. And he brings her coffee, and he helps her with her medical issue. And then her phone starts ringing, and we hear that it's Howard, and he says that he really needs to talk to Jimmy, so we know something's really up.
I like the focus on the goldfish in that dark breakfast. Jimmy making coffee and stuff, getting ready for his day. The goldfish tank was kind of glowing bright, and everything was dark around it. It was a really dark scene, and maybe that was a little bit of a premonition of like Gene being in this tank. You know, he can't ever get out of it. He's stuck there. But yeah, life is good for Jimmy now. He's got a bit of a future.
And he's a caretaker. He's the caretaker of the fish. He's the caretaker of Kim, which I don't think she lets him do a lot of caretaking. She's really, really independent. But at this point, he's getting to do that. So he feels useful and needed, which I think is probably important to him. But they pull up at Chuck's house, and the house is gone. It's just a shell. They had to have, like, actually burned that house, right?
I don't know. It looked good. I mean, it looked effective.
Yeah. Jimmy goes running toward the coroner van, but Howard kind of stops him. And so we see him sitting on a bench outside, and Kim talks to Howard, and then she comes over and she's telling Jimmy all the kind of platitudes that they tell you, that it was over fast, smoke inhalation, he didn't suffer, but Jimmy's not buying any of that. And then this is where he talks about all the appliances and electronic devices in the backyard, and that the fireman didn't do that. So he knows Chuck has went off the deep end again. And Jimmy talks about how he just saw him, and he did. He just saw him. He went over to visit him. And that's when Chuck was so mean. In the last episode of season 3, Jimmy goes over and goes in and talks to him. And Chuck's got all of his lights turned back on. And Jimmy's kind of trying to make amends. Jimmy wants things to be okay between them. And Chuck tells him, "You were never that important to me anyway." And we've seen, like, these flashbacks of Chuck reading to Jimmy as a child. And Chuck was really important to Jimmy. But I don't know that Jimmy was that important to Chuck. And it was just a really sad situation. But Kim says, "Let's just go home. There's really nothing they can do."
Do they give us, I'm trying to remember, Michelle, do they give us any evidence that this was a suicide other than Jimmy just figuring out the appliances being set up in the backyard had to be Chuck and not anyone else?
Well, Howard talks about it, that he thinks he did it on purpose. We see that later on because he says, even though we know that the house was a fire hazard, like what you were talking about with the papers everywhere and the lanterns.
Yeah, you're right. I forgot. He knew lanterns. He's been doing this for 2 years. Yeah, you're right.
Right. Okay. He just didn't feel like it was an accident at all. But when we come back, we get to see Mike. Do you always love to see Mike?
Yeah, Mike's a crowd favorite for sure.
And it's really cool to me how in this show, we're the fourth season in, and Mike has very little to do with Saul at this point, or Jimmy. Mike is like this separate story. Of course, we see it because it's going to all come together, and we know that. But it's a really cool thing how it's almost like a story within a story. And I just always love to see him. And I can't believe it. Mike looks happy. He's in his booth, and he looks happy. Carl comes up to relieve him, and they discuss that it's Mike's last day. But the boss wants the windbreaker back, of course. Just like a little jab to him.
Yeah, so petty.
Yeah, it's like Mike, in his happiness, he just keeps getting, like, these jabs. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, you need to give the windbreaker back. Oh, of course I do.
After he's worked there how long? I mean, we know for years.
I should have known.
Right. So then we see Mike with Kaylee, and he's teasing her, and he tells Stacy, her mom, that he can pick her up. He's got a new job, and he makes his own hours, and everything's great. Did you notice a little bit of hostility with Stacy when she goes, "Must be nice," or was that just supposed to be?
Well, I don't think it was hostility. I think it was disbelief. Like, what? You make your own hours, and you used to be like a check boy at a parking lot booth. You know, it's like unbelievable. And now all of a sudden you got this great job where you make your own hours. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's a mystery that she doesn't get, that she seems a little suspicious of.
Well, then we see Mike walking into his house and he's checking his mail and he's got his check from Madrigal Electromotive. And we know that this is, like we talked about before, the laundered money with the help of Gus. So he can actually spend his money and give his money to Kaylee, which is all he's ever cared about. It's a real decent check, $10,120.51. Okay, so then we see Mike and he's sitting and watching the game, but he's looking really unsettled. And he goes back to the check. He picks up the phone. He's probably calling 411 or something, but he wants the address of the place.
He's watching an Albuquerque Isotopes game, by the way.
Was he?
The name of the team that was on the air freshener from the cab.
Wonder if Mike sent... No, Mike didn't send anybody anywhere in future time. I started to say, wonder if Mike sent the cab driver.
No, it's just a reminder that Jimmy's not that far from... Gene's not that far from this whole setting in New Mexico, even in Omaha.
So that was interesting. We don't really know what he wants that address for. I thought he was suspicious of something else. I don't know, but it ended up that he wasn't. That was kind of funny. But you had to know what was going on to understand that scene or the upcoming scene. And then we go back to Jimmy. He's out of sorts. Howard calls, and Howard's wanting to go through the obituary. What'd you think about that obituary? It's quite the obituary.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame Jimmy for walking away. I got tired of hearing all that glowing history of Chuck myself.
It was a lot of stuff. He graduated at 14. He was the youngest graduate. And then it just goes on and on, all the way through stating cases he'd won and then his philanthropic work and everything. And Jimmy just walks away. Kim goes over and handles that. Jimmy's pretty lucky to have Kim there with him, not just in this scene, but then in the next scene when she brings out the blue Zafiro
on Hero Zafiro. Yeah,
okay. Yeah, that's pretty cool that they showed that again. That's why he came in trying to celebrate the closing out of the Sandpiper account, where he was going to get some money right before Kim's wreck in the last thing.
Yeah, so, that was also the special tequila that Gus used to poison Don Eladio back in Salud.
Right. And Kim pours some shots, hands one off to Jimmy. She drinks hers, and we don't even know if he's going to drink or not, but then he comes around and he does. And then it kind of morphs into the next morning. Jimmy doesn't move, but we hear birds chirping, maybe like a garbage truck going by, and Kim's asleep beside him on the couch. So he's sat there all night long. What do you think's going through his mind?
He's putting together the puzzle of why Chuck killed him, or what, you know, this whole meaning of Chuck. What is the meaning of Chuck? Like, what happened? And that's the double lever that we're going to find the second part of when Howard talks to him later.
That, do you think
that the insanity of exposing Chuck that he did, Jimmy set that all up in court with the fake battery and the phone and the court making him look crazy.
Right.
Created the insurance problem that Howard had to push the final button on Chuck, eject Chuck from the firm button. And so it was that double lever that Jimmy realizes he set in motion. He's putting that together. Plus, he's just feeling lonely. You know, he's lost his only connection to his family, his last blood relative, essentially.
Right, because he always went back to Chuck. He's the one who always went back and tried to make amends and tried to do what he could. And there is no more making amends. The last meeting they had was the last, and the last one was where Chuck told him that he never meant that much to him. So that's a pretty tough pill to swallow. Then it was pretty cool because we went back to the actual last scene that we saw of Hector being loaded into the ambulance with Nacho and Gus hanging out there. They replayed that scene that we saw in the last one, so that was pretty cool. But Gus and Nacho are the only ones there, and the ambulance takes off with Hector, and Gus goes over and calls Juan. And you hear him talking softly in the background. This is where we see Nacho. He's going to try to, like, palm those pills and drop them down the grate. But Gus calls him back too quick. He doesn't get a chance to do it. So he still had those pills on him. And now Gus was giving him the stink eye the whole time. I wasn't sure if that was just Gus Mo and what he does, or if it meant more than that. But it turns out it actually meant a little more than that, as we see.
Yeah, Gus always has had that mysterious sixth sense of, I see something else. I sense something else going on that is got my dander up, that he's worried about something or thinking about something or aware, that otherworldly awareness that he has as a super mastermind.
Yeah, he's definitely intuitive towards stuff like that. But then I started thinking, Gus looks like that a lot of the times about everything. Almost any scene you see him in, he's very suspicious looking. But maybe he's just on the lookout.
Well, he is. He has that super awareness. That's the point, I think.
Well, we see that they end up going to Los Pollos Hermanos. And Nacho is, like, he's sweating it out. He's waiting. He's walking back and forth, waiting to go back. And finally, Bolsa beckons him with a kind of ugly snap of his fingers. And this is where Bolsa's actually introduced to Nacho as Tuco's man. And so we see that. And Bolsa starts telling him that they don't know when Hector's going to be back, but that he had a stroke. And he wants the Salamanca territory to stay the same. He doesn't want any changes in it. And that if they do this right, it could go really good for them. And then they walk out, and he asks Gus what Gus thinks. And Gus says, it's going to be trouble.
That's the true message of this scene, is that the weakness in the Salamanca family by Hector going down is going to look for, opportunists are going to look for an edge to gain control, and that's chaos is going to be a problem.
Yes. And it's going to eventually lead to the DEA, which, of course, is a huge problem with them.
And it looks like that's exactly what happened.
So then Nacho pulls up on that bridge, and he's on a bridge over the water. He gets out with the pills. He opens the container. He drops them in the water, and then he throws the container. And you think, okay, he's gotten rid of those. He followed Mike's advice, because remember, Mike was the one who told him that he had to replace the pills just in case anybody got suspicious that he had stolen from Hector. And after the incident happened, to replace the pills and then get rid of them. So Nacho's followed that advice. But the piece of advice that Nacho didn't follow was when Gus is known to put tracking devices in gas caps. And as we see, Victor, Gus's guy, is watching Nacho through the binoculars with the GPS tracking device. And that's the one thing that Nacho didn't check, was for the tracking device.
So do you think Victor saw enough to make Nacho looks suspicious? Or do you think he has to go further and find the vial and go down to the riverbank and find it? And I mean, because he just looks like, okay, so the guy took a moment to think and he stood on the bridge and, you know, threw something.
If he hadn't thrown that quite so dramatically, I don't think it would have been nearly the big deal. But the fact that he threw it like that... Gus was looking at the pills sideways when he was standing there with Nacho. And Nacho is handing the pills to the ambulance driver. They said, does he take any medication? And Nacho hands out the pills. And Gus looked very suspicious about that. We know that Gus didn't want Mike to kill Hector because Gus wants to kill Hector. He says that's too good for him. So you have to think that Gus isn't going to be overly receptive to Nacho killing him either. Gus feels like that's his to do.
Well, and also Gus doesn't want the whole chaos slash attention slash DEA event to cascade down on him either. So,
well, yeah. Right, but Gus has got to be glad to get rid of Hector, though. I mean, Hector is awful.
No, he's not glad because of those two things. That's the point. He doesn't want, he wants him eventually in the right way to get to be taken care of, but not in this sudden way.
Right, obviously, but Hector, what he was so mad about, why he even had the stroke to begin with, was because he was told he was going to have to work with Gus, and it was final, and it came down from Don Eladio. So that's what caused the stroke to begin with, there in Nacho's father's business.
Yeah, but Gus was just leveraging. I mean, Gus was making that operation better by doing the packaging better and all those little changes. Hector didn't like it, but Gus wasn't suddenly changing things like taking Hector out. It wasn't time for that yet. So this this makes him angry because he wants Hector in his place, but at the right time and place.
Right, but Hector was causing him a lot of trouble coming into his place of business, and he had to shut it down for the day and get his employees, like, therapy or whatever, offer them that because of the way he came in there. He knew Hector was not a good thing to have. Hector was screwing up, and Hector was going to end up, I think, screwing up Gus' business one way or another.
Yeah, see, I don't think so, because I think Hector also had to report to Don Eladio, and Don Eladio was seeing the improvements that Gus was making, and he had to comply with Don Eladio. Hector was a thorn in his side, but he wasn't a threat to him. He wasn't going to go peacefully along with the changes that Gus was introducing, but, you know, he wanted to take him out at his own pace and the time and place that he chose, not this. He didn't want other people to do it, like you said, but I don't think he was happy that Hector was out of the picture or partially out of the picture at this point.
Yeah, I don't really see it like that. I think he is happy that Hector's out of the picture. I think he would have wanted to have more control over how he got out of the picture, and I think he wanted to torture Hector. But
this affects his whole business model, Michelle. If the DEA starts poking around, it fucks everything up for Gus.
Of course. But Hector was saying, even as he was going into his stroke, I think is when he was saying it last season, about how the Salamancas started this and who did Don Eladio think he was and stuff like that. Hector was a wild card.
It doesn't matter though if he can't do anything about it. He can be resentful, but he doesn't have the power or the control. It's all Don Eladio slash Don Bolsa that are above him, I think. Maybe Bolsa's equal to Hector or not so much above him, but Don Eladio is above him and he has the power.
Yeah, and I guess too, to kind of make your point, Bolsa made a comment to Gus that Hector was always a problem, but he did keep his house in order. So you may have a point with that. Okay, then we go to the scene where I thought we should know who this guy was. He comes outside, his kid's chain comes off his bike, he stops, he helps him out. And the whole time I'm thinking, who is this? We should know him, but we don't. We soon see that he's searching for his ID badge for Madrigal Electric that Mike is wearing as he walks in. So Mike has stopped this guy's car, done something to his car to disable it, and stolen his ID badge so he can get in. So that was pretty funny. And Mike just picks up the clipboard, and he just acts like he belongs. He goes and gets a cup of coffee, he's signing birthday cards, he's having a conversation and interjecting his Bruce Lee, Ali.
Yeah, Michelle, who would win a fight between Muhammad Ali and Bruce Lee?
That's a good question. I'm going to go with Bruce Lee.
I'm with Mike. Muhammad Ali would kick Bruce Lee's ass in about 30 seconds.
I don't think he could catch him. I think he would if he ever could land a punch, but I don't think he could catch him. I don't know, though. This is silly. It's like Superman versus Spider-Man or whatever, because although Ali's a real person, and Bruce Lee is a real person, but some of the stuff that they showed him doing seemed kind of over the top. Sometimes.
Do you think Mike jacked the kid's bike chain as well as took the drain the guy's battery to make him late?
That's a good question. I hadn't thought of that. Maybe. I wouldn't put it past him, would you?
I don't know. I think Mike likes kids, so I'm hoping not.
So we see him sign that birthday card. What did he sign that with? Did you notice that?
I think he signed it with the guy's name, didn't he?
Benny? Yeah, Benny H or something.
Barry H, yeah.
Barry, okay. I was reading Benny on the card. But yeah, it said Reach for the Stars. That was funny. And then Mike, he is having a field day. He gets in the go-kart, he's got on his reflective vest, he's passing everybody, he's stopping beside him. No one even notices him. And I can picture that happening in this situation. Can you?
I think it's a golf cart, not a go-kart. Yeah.
Yeah. But you're right.
Yeah, he assumes you're the right role of the inspector, like, oh, I belong here, and he walks around like he owns the place, which, you know, if you act that way, you usually can get away with murder. Getting a donut, getting coffee, getting the clipboard, looking at everybody everywhere, looking at the cameras. Just walks around like he belongs there, and everybody just accepts it. It's a huge operation, this Madrigal Electromotive, and that's one of their branches. So, not everybody knows everybody, and if you have a badge and a yellow vest, you could probably do anything you wanted.
Well, right. I mean, hundreds of employees, obviously, and he has such an air of confidence about him that no one's going to question
him. It's funny how he elevated it too. Like, wow, he's going to go in and get a cup of coffee. That's pretty ballsy. And then he's whistling at people. Hey, over here, you can't do that without clearance. You all six need to go back and
like, get a really lift belt. Yeah. Get some gloves.
Yeah. That was funny.
Rules are rules. He's actually taken this security thing really, really seriously.
So I got a mix out of that, Michelle, of not just examining where his money is coming from, what this company is and who they are and what are they doing, but just that Mike is like that no half measures guy. He's doing it. If he's going to get paid for a goddamn job, he's going to do it goddamn well. So he wants to do that job that he's getting paid for, and he wants to do it well. And he finds security breaches and reports them all. He's good at being a security analyst.
He is good, and I agree with that. And at the same time, I was also wondering if maybe he was wanting to go in and make such a stink, because he goes to the manager, right? And he's talking to the manager about everything. Barry comes in with his temporary ID tag, and Mike goes up to him and gives him the ID tag that he stole from and says, I need to talk to your manager. And then he goes to the manager. And he's telling the manager, he does like this 3-minute list of everything that's wrong going on there. So I'm wondering if maybe he wants to be seen, because now nobody can question the fact that Mike Ehrmantraut was there. He was there and he worked there. We've got him on camera there. They can never question, well, where did you work? What did you do? Because he is on, they showed him looking up at a camera. He's there. So it's full face. He was there and he was doing a job. So it can never be questioned as far as the money that he's getting paid.
Yeah, maybe that's a good point, that he's established that he's really working for the checks and are not just showing up for money laundering purposes.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking he was doing it for, because he did make such a he was so bolsterous about everything he did. He certainly didn't hide it. But also, like you said, I think he likes it and he's good at it.
And he doesn't do anything half-assed. He's going to do it. If he's going to do it, he's going to do it well.
Right. No half measures. Perfect. Next, we go to Chuck's funeral. And everybody's paying their respects to Jimmy. he's fiddling around with a bereavement card, and Rebecca, Chuck's ex-wife, is sobbing in the background. Then we see him and Kim leave, and they go home, and Howard's there. This was awful. What'd you think about that scene when Howard comes? Howard is distraught.
It's that's the double lever. That's the purpose of it, I think. That these two events by themselves would be bad, but them put together are what Jimmy has to deal with now.
Well, yeah, and he's telling Jimmy that Jimmy had probably heard that Howard was retiring, or that Chuck was retiring, but that's not exactly what happened. Howard confesses that he forced him out because of the bar hearing, but because he was improving and all that, but that it was actually the insurance was the straw that broke the camel's back. And Jimmy's sitting there, and this kind of catches his attention, and he asks about the insurance, what does he mean? And Howard goes into the malpractice insurance, how they raise the rates, and Howard forced him out. And Howard's upset. He's crying. And I didn't know what Jimmy was going to do about that. I kind of thought he might tell him.
But maybe. He doesn't have to, though. I wish other shows that we do in our podcast series, Michelle, have this type of writing where these events are all daisy chained together and we see how they leveraged one another. And this is what creates the dilemma Jimmy has, that Jimmy showing up a Chuck in court made the insurance thing happen. And that is the double whammy that put Chuck in a place where he had no choice, he thought, other than to kill himself. That any other way, he probably could have gotten better and would have like limped along through the rest of his days and been kind of a retired lawyer. But now he couldn't do that because of what Jimmy did. This is the culmination of those events.
But it wasn't just what happened in court, because if it was what happened in court, then Kim would feel the same guilt over it. But Jimmy had actually went to the insurance company trying to get his money back for the year he had paid in advance and then was suspended, had his law license suspended.
Right. And but both things Jimmy did added to more than 1 + 1. They added to like 1 + 1 = 6.
Sure.
They made it double. They leveraged into an exponential result that made Chuck do what he did.
But I thought Jimmy was going to feel bad about that. I thought this might be a breaking point of Jimmy when he realized that the insurance thing was the straw that caused the literal end of Chuck. And it was something he deliberately set in motion. He cried in front of this woman and then walked out with this just furious look on his face because he's so mad at Chuck. It was very deliberate that he did it to get Chuck in trouble. And that was not his reaction at all. It put the skip back in his step.
Well, that's an incredible, that's a linchpin thing to consider. So does it make Jimmy feel bad and Saul feel good? Or does it turn Jimmy into Saul? Or is it Jimmy covering up what he really feels? Because you know Jimmy feels bad that this happened. You know he feels bad. He's pretending like, well, good, great. This is what he deserves then. That's complicated. I don't think it's just him being a dick and thinking, well, good, I'm glad it turned out this way. Something in there in that whole formula is how Jimmy became Saul, or Jimmy covers up his guilt by pretending he's Saul, or Saul being a part of Jimmy. You put the math together on that, but that's the complication. That's the interesting part of all that, I think.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times where we see Jimmy so thoughtful during this episode is he is trying to process how he actually feels about this. Of course, he's sad, and it's tragic, and it's startling. It was completely unexpected. But I think that maybe Jimmy, at the end of this, realizes how he actually feels. And he's like, tough. That's what he gets. He tortured me forever and ever. He said I never meant anything to him. And this is what happened, and I'm glad in a way that I had a part
maybe,
in this.
Maybe. But that's Saul, I think, is a veneer on Jimmy. Because Gene is way more like Jimmy than Saul is like Jimmy. Gene is contemplative, introvertedly thinking of things and making, bearing the weight of all the decisions he's made in life that have led him to where he is. And I think that's Jimmy. Saul is a veneer. Saul is a character costume that he puts on over Jimmy that lets him say, well, good, he deserved that. If that's what he did, then he deserved that. That's not really Jimmy. That's a front, I think.
Well, yeah, I agree. It's an exaggerated front. But we also saw with Jimmy, I mean, he was known as Slippin' Jimmy. He always had that inclination to defraud and get away with. We see it several times with Kim when they go out to bars and they discuss ways to do that kind of thing. It's how Jimmy, even Jimmy's mind works. So,
yeah, it's not binary. It's a degree of grayness that Jimmy turns into Saul. I mean, but Jimmy is sad about Chuck. He's not glad that this happened. Saul is a veneer. That's the hint of Saul, Jimmy becoming Saul's veneer that we know from Breaking Bad. The Saul. Think how different Saul looks in Breaking Bad than Jimmy looks when he's with Kim, and you know that's we're starting to see Saul. I mean, this is Saul's birth, I think.
I think so too. And in the same scene, we still have Kim, and we have the goldfish. And I know the goldfish is kind of silly seeming, but he's caring for the goldfish. He cares for it. And we see Kim, he's caring for Kim. So he still has those two things. He's still this caretaker. So he's not completely Saul yet, but I think he has taken turned a steep corner towards Saul.
And he made the goldfish is interesting too, because he made the goldfish's life better. He was in a little bag when he first got him.
Right.
Is he making Kim's life better?
I think he's trying.
But is he? He's clearly made the goldfish life better.
Okay, but the same thing with Chuck, right? Because he tried to make Chuck's life better, but it didn't work. He tried to make the goldfish life better. I'm afraid that's going to come to a bad end. Kim's life, you're right, I think, in what you're insinuating. He didn't. He's not making Kim's life better. But he tries. So that's like the saddest part of it, right?
Yeah, the most interesting thing to me is when he fails, the veneer of Saul that he puts on to justify his failure, to cope with his failure.
Right.
I mean, I wonder myself how I, like, I try to figure that out for myself. It's a hard connection to make, but what do I appear to the world when I'm trying to cover up the feelings that I have about not being competent with something or being afraid of something, or, you know, what mask do I put onto the world? But I think that's what we're getting with Jimmy here, is Saul is his mask that he's uses to cope.
Which is really sad, but it makes her such an interesting character that you feel kind of conflicted about it, or I do. I feel a little conflicted because I want to see Saul, but I hate the fact that we have to destroy Jimmy to get there.
That's probably what happens to Kim and Jimmy. Kim loves Jimmy, but she doesn't love Saul.
You know, and we kind of see her giving him the look when he's like skipping over there. He's like, well, Howard, that's your cross to bear then, isn't it, dude? Knowing that he's the one responsible for that, but he gives it to Howard. And then he's like, anybody want some coffee? He's going to make some coffee. He's going to feed his fish. And he talks about the fish. And, oh, look how good the fish looks. And he's happy.
Yeah, it's kind of a trope in relationships. Like, I don't even know who you are anymore. And that's kind of what Jimmy's starting to show here with his Saul-ness to Kim.
So that was the end of episode 1. I didn't see the upcoming. They hinted that it was going to be in the middle of the next show that aired, but I didn't have that taped, so I didn't get to see that.
It's a pretty good start. I think it's slow, but it's effective. So I would have to say I liked it.
It's slow, but so well done. Just so well done. The acting, the directing, the cinematography, everything about this is so well done. It would have felt false and forced if we had had anything else, I think, over the top added to this. And they always deliver.
I was going to say the exact same thing. I trust these writers. They know what they're doing. They know where they're going. They're putting building blocks in place for where we need to see the rest of the story, and it's all going to be entertaining along the way. Different from how other shows that we do, that we podcast, where we don't see that, where it seems like they're winging it and things just like pop up out of nowhere. Like, what the hell? You wouldn't do that in real life. Right. You wouldn't do that. That's stupid. You know, why would they put that in there? And just like they jump to a certain conclusion, they make us think a certain conclusion just because they wrote it in there, not because that's what would really happen and transpire in time over how people would actually act among each other. And this is a very much more logical show. And I don't know, I trust my point, I guess, is I trust the writers to keep in Better Call Saul to keep these events happening in a way that it's so believable and so compelling that you can't wait to see more of it.
Right. It feels so real. Everything about this feels real. You can actually see, or you know somebody who reacts or responds that way, or it makes sense that somebody would. It's not, it doesn't feel contrived to me. It feels very like the natural flow based on personalities.
It's kind of like Mike getting the coffee. Like, wow, he's bold. He's getting coffee. He walked right in there and got a cup of coffee. Now he's like bossing people around. Like, that elevation of his power is like interesting. It's not just, okay, they made it logical, but they made it super interesting. So like, what's this going to leverage up into? What, wherever we are now, and we know the ending, so it's like somewhere in the middle. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess we don't know the ending to Gene, though. That's super compelling, too. So we don't really know the ending. We know we got a big chunk of the middle with Breaking Bad, but we don't know the ending of Gene, and that is hugely compelling to whatever happens to Jimmy / Saul / Gene. Well, but I trust that these writers will get us there, and I'm really interested in what is going to happen along the way. Not just that it makes sense, but it's super interestingly making sense.
And Vince Gilligan in an interview actually said never say never to another spinoff, insinuating that we may actually have a spinoff about Gene, which wouldn't that be great? Like a whole
He's
other
kind
series.
Of a funny guy, so I would, that sounds jokingly like a joking response to me, because I don't see that happening.
Well, they were talking about that Saul probably only has a couple more seasons, because then we're going to catch up with Breaking Bad. And that's it. It was all speculative, but a lot of the speculation is that there's going to be Gene, and maybe even how Gene is restored in some way. It's just speculation, but I mean, I would think it could definitely go somewhere.
By the way, they are renewed for season 5, which hopefully will be the end of it. I think 5 is a good number for a series to run. But Better Call Saul is approved for a season 5.
Yeah.
Which more quickly than 3 was approved for a 4, because we didn't actually know that. Although we probably all thought that. I mean, it's such a great story.
Right.
But they're already approved for next year. Do you have the name of 402? Do they have the cool naming protocol?
Oh, I didn't. I didn't look at the name. Do you?
I'll look it up.
Okay. Yeah, because it's pretty telling. I want to know how we get on the list to get the preview episodes for review.
402 Breathe.
Okay.
I don't think you just get on a list. I think you have to be some sort of a industry writer or critique. It's not like you're on the list. Yo, I'm on the list. I'm on the pre-approved list. Where's my episodes?
Yeah.
See you next week on 402.
We'll see you then, Mike.